Hello, boys and girls of Credit Union Land, and welcome to episode 68 of the CU Insight Experience. This episode is brought to you by our friends at PSCU. As the nation's premier payments QSO, PSCU proudly supports the success of more than 1,500 credit unions. My name is Randy Smith. I'm one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Lisa Brown. Lisa is the president and CEO of Tallahassee Leon Federal Credit Union. I've known Lisa for a while. She was a mentor in my DE class, best class ever, and my conversations with her have always been so enjoyable and entertaining. Many of you that know Lisa know that she has a passion for credit unions that is second to none. This was no different, even with everything we all are going through at the moment with COVID-19 and social distancing, but we still had a blast on this conversation. We talked about issues facing credit unions today and in the long term. Lisa told us about opening a branch in 5 days so they could have drive-through service in this time of social distancing for their members. We talked about low-income credit union members and really just having that empathy to think forward about what not only people are going to deal with today, but what they're going to deal with 90 days from now or maybe even months from now or who knows how long at this point. Just an amazing, amazing conversation. We went over all those leadership life lessons that she's learned along the way and how some of those past experiences are helping, quite honestly, just with dealing with what we're all going through now, even though it's something that we haven't experienced before. As always, we had some fun with the rapid fire questions to wrap up the show. Lisa was open and honest, just like I assumed she would be, and I thank her for that. And I will tell you that there is stuff, no matter where we are in our careers from this episode, that I think we will all learn from. So, without further ado, I give you my conversation with Lisa Brown. Enjoy. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is these are interesting times we're living through. So we'll just go with that for right now. And there's a ton of different directions, So from knowing you, I know we are still going to have fun no matter what's going on. So we'll just jump right into it. You and I were messaging over Facebook, and I thought it would just be an amazing time to share some of these lessons that you're picking up along the way and learning from in this time of crisis. For anyone listening, is there one piece of advice that you'd have to give about getting things done quickly in a time like this? You told me that you guys opened a branch in 5 days. That's amazing.
Yes. I'm not sure if there's a lot of lessons to be shared at this point. I think right this minute, we're all just pushing forward the best that we can. And I think that there'll be a time to have follow-up conversations and really reevaluate down the road when we have a chance to breathe. But yeah, I would say that, I guess let's just kind of talk about the new branch. So we, crazy enough, last year we started looking, we have an office in a more rural area. We'll call it like a bedroom community outside of the Tallahassee area. I'll say maybe 30, 40 miles south of Tallahassee, depending on where you're at.
Okay.
And it's an 1,100 square foot office, tiny office with no drive-through capabilities, does have an ATM, but small office. And we were coming up on our lease was expiring. And so we took a step, said, well, let's look around, let's evaluate. And I thought we had all this time to put this together. And our lease was coming up this August of 2020. And so we made a decision to purchase a branch at the end of January. And interestingly enough, I flew to London to speak at the ABCL meeting, which is kind of the UK's version of CUNA.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was supposed to speak over there and got over there and found out the next day that there was a travel ban being issued. So I caught an emergency flight back. Unfortunately, had to cancel my speaking engagement. But on the flight back, began to reach out to our board members because I knew, and for those of us that have had that pandemic emergency plan sitting on a shelf somewhere for the last decade plus, you realize that that's one of the steps that you really need if you're going to be addressing a pandemic situation in order to socially distance appropriately. You have to have drive-through capabilities. Yeah. So I knew that that was going to be an issue. And so I called the board, and I'm very grateful to have a board that was super supportive and said to me, well, if anybody can pull it off, it's you. And boy, what a vote of confidence. I mean, that made it so nice. It made it just to have that level of support from them to not just to say that, yes, go forth, but to also acknowledge what a monumental task it was going to be.
I have a quick question here. You mentioned the pandemic plan sitting on the shelf collecting dust, right? And I think that I know for many, right, like after Katrina, people did a lot of business continuity planning and things nature. And pandemic was a part of that planning process. Was that something that your board knew existed? Or, I mean, I know it's just a blueprint at this point, but.
No, that's so funny that you say that. So for us, we always, as you can imagine, we are experts in continuity for hurricanes.
Absolutely, like,
I
mean, right?
I could do that with my eyes closed, right? But for, you know, for pandemic, it's one of those things where, you know, we went through the exercise, of course, every year as a part of the conversation. And just quite honestly, to be real honest, we kind of roll our eyes at it, like, yeah, whatever, you know. But it was in there, and we thought, okay, that's great. Well, in January, when there was like this conversation about it, I put it out. You know, I just said, hey, let's put it in the board packet. Let's just make sure everybody knows that it exists. And, you know, just in case. And so everybody's got a copy of it. And so when I brought it back up, you know, as all this started to really develop, they're like, oh, that thing that you just brought out. And I'm like, no, actually, we've had it for a really long time. Wow. We just never talk about it, you know?
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you what's really hysterical about it is that we're finding ourselves, and I mean, this is really funny, for those of us that are like kind of scarred from all of the hurricanes and really have that as a part of, this is so different. And so what we find is that my team and I all instantly want to go to the fact that somehow or another, we don't have power.
Right.
Like, wait a minute, right? It's so funny. It's like, well, what are we going to do about this? Or what? And we didn't start to think about really, I mean, you do think about it, but it's not instinctive.
Right. I can say that. Yeah.
The whole social distancing thing, right? Like, we all want to roll our sleeves up and help each other out. And hey, I'll run over and help you at your branch, and you can come over here and help me at mine. And it really was a huge challenge for us to say, no, like, each of us we can't be going back and forth between branches, because that's, you know, a tremendous risk. So it's crazy. It's just such a weird place to be to rethink about all of that.
I can imagine. Like you said, with hurricanes kind of being something you deal with regularly, it just makes sense that that's where your mind would go, like, okay, we need to stock up, make sure that there's enough wine. And
that's right. That's right.
I don't think that changes, actually. I think that's
That's consistent.
Yeah, that is.
That's
right.
That's totally consistent. What's not consistent is, like, I still have running water and
Power, you know,
and power, but I can't be face to face with my team. And so that really, it's really strange. It's a really strange feeling.
I want to circle back to that in a minute, kind of as we get towards the leadership stuff more. But I would like to bring up, you know, one of the things that you and I were talking about last week was the fact that you serve you have a high percentage of low income members. So, you know, that's been the part to me is, like, when you think of the service industry as a whole, so many of those people, unless they're in a grocery store, basically have been losing jobs. I mean, and just instantly, right? Like, when everything's been getting shut down. So what are you doing, I guess, to help those members who need it most in this time of need? And you know, is there something that you've been doing down there over the past week or two that you think other credit unions could replicate?
Yeah, for sure. So a couple of different things on that front. Going back to that Crawfordville office, which is that bedroom community, that is an office that is definitely services a number of our hardworking, you know, we call them ALICE population. That's the folks that are hardworking, sometimes multiple jobs, many times single income households, maybe single parents, and also those that are one paycheck away from a disaster, right? So especially down in that little bit more rural community, and if you think about the challenges that folks might be experiencing in the way of transportation right now, that becomes even more escalated. So it was so important that we open up that office and escalate that ability to provide service to members, because my other option was to have to close that branch completely in this more rural community. And that was a big deal. So offering that. The other thing that we did, and it was interesting, I was having a conversation early on with our federal examiner, and then I'd also seen this really funny, and it made me giggle a little bit, this really funny, it's like a new, on, you know, one of the news stations or news shows that we're talking about when the stock market was that first day that it really was crashing, and they were saying that, you know, for especially not for nothing, but us Gen Xers, you know, we've kind of done this before a little bit. And so we're kind of like, whatever, you know, like it'll be fine. We're just going to keep going and just move forward. But those like the millennials that are maybe just now kind of getting it, they're like sitting in the corner, sucking their thumb going, oh my God, what's happening? You know, and they're just completely panicked. So it's kind of funny. That made me laugh a little bit, but it really makes you, if you take a step back and look at this from a 30,000 foot level, you know, for those of us that have kind of been through this before, if you were around in that 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10 period, you've got some lessons that you maybe hopefully have learned from that you can kind of take and apply to this. But in having conversations with my federal examiner, I said, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is the first question I ask myself is if I could have done to that time period, that 7 through 10 time period all over again, what would I have done differently? And one of the things that I realized, and I'm not sure, I guess time will tell if this proves to be a correct theory, but one of the things that I realized, especially in working with low-income populations, and quite frankly, really anybody, but especially this, you know, really rings true with low-income populations. And I would also say kind of the first responder community, we do a lot of work with them as well. And it has to do with, I think, their attention focuses so immediately on the crises in front of them that their personal financial situation gets put on that back burner in times like this, even more so than the rest of us. And so, you know, putting those two things together, the thing I thought was really important that we look at doing differently was to say, okay, let's wipe this slate clean for everybody. Let's start from, instead of being reactive and waiting on members to come and talk to us, which in many cases, we all know that most people are going to put their heads in the sand. Most are, I don't care how comfy you make them feel or how wonderful you tell them that we are, they are still going to be embarrassed and nervous about calling and saying, I need help. So what we did was we went out there and I already presented to the board and they've approved it, that we are going to go ahead and move up all of our consumer loan portfolio. We're moving those due dates up to 90 days.
Okay.
What we're going to be doing over the next 90 days is not just sitting around going, oh, hey, check it out. Like, we don't have any delinquency. This is great. We're going to be spending the time actively. Our goal is to reach out and contact every single member and touch base. And we're going to do this on two fronts. We're going to be managing this through some very different ways, but we're going to be obviously doing it on a case-by-case, individual, let me talk to you and find out what your situation is. We've got a few questions that we're asking, and it's going to be things like, hey, has the pandemic impacted your paycheck?
Yeah.
Has it impacted your employment situation? And then we're going to ask, and hey, wait, do you think it might impact it in the next 90 days? Is that a possibility? Then the next question we're going to ask is, well, has it impacted your additional expenses? Have you had any additional healthcare costs? Have you had any additional childcare costs? Things like that. So we're going to document all of those on a case-by-case basis, and we're going to put it in our, we call it resolutions department. We're going to put it in there so that our collector team can best know who's at risk when we start to come out of this, who's the highest risk, so that we can be sure that we're reaching back out to these folks. The next thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be gathering this data on an aggregate basis and saying, okay, in total, for instance, 67% of our membership has not seen an impact to their income. And I think that that's important information for us to continue to be able to manage our lending criteria moving forward. You know, our board will be, our management and board will be able to better gauge what the long-term implications will be for this crisis. And I think that that's, if again, lessons learned from back then, this is something that I think, because so much when we went through this before, so much of what we were doing was just so, like, you know, we were just running around putting out fires all day, and we couldn't ever wrap our arms around it. And I think by pushing those due dates out, it buys us some time to really dig in and gather appropriate data so that we are able to navigate the next really 12 to 18 months. For realistically, we can all talk about that this is going to be something that goes, you know, that when we all get back to work, it's just going to come right back, but it's not. And so I just feel like this is a great way of how we move forward.
It's something that, you know, when I've been talking to colleagues, you mentioned being a Gen Xer. I remember first job out of college, I worked on the dark side at Morgan Stanley, and the tech bubble burst, and then 9/11 happened, right? And it was, you know, just, but the idea that you go through these things and you don't have answers day one, right? But we know that, you know, we've experienced a few of these. You talk about 2008, right? So it's, we know that we'll come out of it. We don't know how, but so I think it's super smart to take that breath and then look at it and say, what can we do to keep moving forward instead of just like playing defense, like, oh crap, what's going to happen, you know? I commend you for that. I'm clapping over the Skype for you. So,
Thank you. Well, it is difficult to do, especially, and I'll just kind of speak from a very sort of vulnerable and personal perspective. You know, when you're, and so I say this not only for me as an individual, but thinking about the various situations that my team are going through.
Absolutely.
I'm hearing that there are credit union branches already that have had to shut their doors because of either a potential someone's being tested or an actual positive diagnoses, and it terrifies me from a leadership perspective, the idea that I would not be able to provide the level of service to members in such a critical time. And this isn't going to go away. We're not going back to normal operations next week. I don't have to just hold my breath for one more week. I've got, you know, we're going to have months of this.
Yeah. And so, I mean, everybody keeps talking about the medical experts seem to be talking about that this could become the new normal for a year or so, you know, where it's just like we kind of get back to a little bit of normal and then we have to social distance again until there could be a vaccine. None of us know at this point, but, you know, we got to be prepared for it.
So. And I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. That I agree with you completely on too.
You know, and thinking about, you know, you've got employees that might be worrying about, I've got one right now that had to break to homeschool his kid, you know, do a homeschool meeting for his kid this morning at 9:30. You know, it's like, this is so weird. It's just this, but to understand that all of our team are, you know, these folks are all going to have additional pressures. And regardless of how committed you may be to this level of member service, you know, we've got to remember that this is something that's going to be ongoing for all of us. And change is hard for anybody, but add to it the stress and anxiety of health concerns. It's intense.
So before we move on, because I do want to make sure that we get to the leadership and the life hacks. That's why people listen to the podcast. And I know you have a bunch to share, but I have one last question from this first part of the section of questions. You and I, we're sitting down a year from now. It's next year at GAC, let's just say, or something like that. And like, what are you most proud of that you and your team have accomplished over that past year when you kind of sit there today and you're like, this is going to be a crazy year?
You know, that is a really, it's a tough question because we have such aspirations. And for those of us that are type A, like a self-confessed, you know, type A or over here, I want everything, you know, I want the service members. I want to see folks succeed. But at this point right now, and I really try to live fearlessly, right? Yep, I really try to, but that's increasingly difficult to do right now. And I think right now, I would say, I just want to see that our team comes out of this happy and healthy, and that our members come out of this happy and healthy to the highest degree that we can. And I think that's really my biggest hope right this minute.
I think that is the hope we should all have at this point, right? So everything else we can get back to. So on to the second part of the show, the leadership and the life hacks. I know people are going to love to learn from you here. So, and I guarantee there's going to be some nuggets that we can all take from. So what inspired you, you know, originally, you've mentioned you've been there for a few years now, to take the gig as president and CEO of TLFCU?
I'm not even sure. There are days I ask myself that very question. I'm not really sure what inspired me per se, but I would tell you that. So I got my very first job working in a credit union when I was in high school. I was 17 years old, and I will never forget. Ray Kramer was my CEO at the time. And as a part of your new hire training, you had to go through this history and philosophy of credit unions class. And I know that, I mean, in my mind, I'm looking back and I'm like, I learned so many things from that.
Oh, no, but as a couple DEs, that was amazing that you had to go through
that.
I absolutely love that.
That's way to go, right. And so, as a 17-year-old, so keep in mind, when I was a little girl, the only thing I wanted to do when I grew up was have a job where I wore high heels, because for those of you that know me, I'm only 5 foot tall. So I wanted a job that I could wear high heels. That was my whole goal in life. And I was like, hey, this might be a career path for me because I can wear high heels. And guess what? I believe in what they just shared with me. I believe in what credit unions stand for. And that I will tell you in the 20-something, you know, 7-something years that I've been doing this now, that single fundamental piece has never changed. It has never changed. I will tell you that during some of the crises that we've worked our way through, I unintentionally lost sight of that during various times. You know, when you're constantly battling with regulators and you're constantly battling your way out of a hole and you're looking at the financials and you're looking at these big numbers and you're not, you know, you tend to lose sight of the individual member. I'll be honest, when coming out of all of that, going through DE helped me to just, you know, remember it from the bottom of my gut. And I'm so grateful for that.
So you were a mentor in my DE class. And and if you remember correctly, like on the last day, there was an older CEO from Texas, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And he broke down in tears saying that he needed this, right? Like to just reconnect to, and I think he'd been in the business, 30 some years at the time or something. It's a beautiful experience. That's for sure.
It really is.
Gosh, there's a couple different things I wanted to kind of bouncing around now where I wanted to go here. So you mentioned DE is helping bringing back that focus. Is there something, we can't always just go to DE again? I guess we could. Once we're a DE, we could go mentor or something. But when you're feeling lost, you know, like when the day-to-day kind of takes you off that path, is there something that you do to kind of bring that focus back?
Well, I think, I mean, I guess off the top of my head, I do have a couple of internal mantras.
Okay.
Again, kind of being a little bit vulnerable and a little bit, you know, sort of out there. There's a couple of mantras that I have that on the tough days, I tell myself these things. So the first one is, this cracks me up because I will tell you that my view on this has changed over the years. probably about 10 years ago or so, shortly after I took over at this credit union as the CEO, I was recognized as the CEO Times as a woman to watch, right? It was a big deal. It was such an honor. It was so awesome. And I was so excited. And the quote that I had at the time was, sleep is for sissies.
Oh. It's amazing how that changes. That,
and
yeah.
Now, now I'm kind of a little bit, I laugh a little because I will tell you that over the last decade, I have learned that self-care is probably a little bit important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And encouraging those around me to do the same, that's also very important. I think the other kind of funny things that the mantras that I use, on the days that are tough, I get up and I remind myself of the things that I've been through. So I think back and I say, remember when you did this hard thing or that hard thing? And part of that goes back to what I was saying a minute ago about really living fearlessly. So I was lucky enough to be one of the very first African DE, got my certification over in Nairobi. That was, I mean, I'm this little, my dad was a tire store manager. My mom was a school teacher. Who would have ever thought that I would have the life that I have,
you know,
and I'm over here and I'm in the middle of the Masai Mara and I'm, I'm doing these hard things over there that I just never thought I would do. And I realized that that was such a life lesson in learning to lead fearlessly, learning to live fearlessly, not foolishly, but, you know, but don't let fear dictate how you make your decisions and how you lead. And along those same lines, on the days that are really tough, the really, really, really toughest days, you're going to laugh. I get up and I look at myself in the mirror and I say, this is what separates the men from the boys.
Oh, well, I guess that's...
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's hilarious.
But it also, that by saying that to myself, it reminds me that I'm doing things that in some cases are not done by women.
Absolutely.
And that I'm doing things that are sort of outside of that norm and outside of, and hopefully at least my ratios say so. I think I'm doing them well.
From what I know, I think you are too. So that brings me into a question that I had sent to you, but that I really wanted to make sure to ask. And that's, is there a common myth about being a leader? You just mentioned you might not look like what the traditional leader, right? You know, I mean,
right.
You know, is there a myth that you would just want to debunk about what it takes to be a good leader?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think one of the things that I would say, again, probably over the last decade that I've tried to really focus on is really being true to myself, not trying to be what everyone else wants me to be or what image I think other people think that I should be or how I should behave, but rather sort of owning my own truth, my own, the ways I communicate, the story that I have to tell, the individual challenges that I've been through in my life, being transparent about those, not only to maybe my team, but even to my board, even to members, not being so afraid to say, hey, look, I've been there, or it hurts me when I hear you say those words, or, you know, that you're going through this at this time, and how can I help? And really, I think getting to a place where I'm really comfortable in my own skin, for lack of a better term, and kind of accepting the notion that I'm good enough. And I think that that's something that, if we're really honest with ourselves,
yep,
that's something specifically that us type A folks really struggle with. You know?
It may take us a little longer to learn that lesson, right?
Bit yeah, so. Longer. That's right. Well, and especially during times of adversity,
yep,
where, yep, you know, your decision making impacts, you know, Lord knows how many people, your employees, your members, all those kinds of things. So learning how to to have confidence in your decisions, make decisions that aren't what everyone else is doing or what you think others want you to do, but rather what you think is the right decision.
So that ability to make that tough decision, is that something that you always had, or is that something that you've kind of had to cultivate and grow over your career as we've gotten more mature?
I would say I've never shied away from making a decision. Nor have I shied away from making the tough decision. I would say this though, on the outside, I think it's that 2 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep, second guessing yourself that I have begun to be able to let go of. And just knowing that, especially in an environment where we're changing so fast, that it's equally as important that if we're going to fail, let's fail fast and recover. And I think that's the confidence that comes with experience of trying things and doing things and becoming comfortable in that, of saying, you know what, if this is wrong, I know how to fix it, or we'll go to plan B, or we'll, you know, I know the next step. So that's important.
You know, I agree with you. And I think that second guessing that you were talking about, like sitting up and like going back over scenarios. When Rachel Prost was on the show earlier this year, and she was talking about like some of the things that she's learned from now having MS, you know, I mean, so like big life changing stuff, right? But she said one of the questions she asked to keep her stress level down, and I found myself doing this, but it was like, am I going to remember this a year from now? Like, will that board packet, will they remember what was in it 1 year from now? That's, and if it's right, not, why am I staying up at night? Because nobody else is, right? So it was like, I thought it was great. Just one of those great little things to, another mantra to throw
that
in the head.
Like, no, right? It is great. It used to be, and this is years ago, I used to say, is it on the 5-year plan?
Oh, right.
If it's not on the 5-year plan, then I don't care about it today. However, I will say 1 year is far more appropriate for the times we're living in now.
I'm sorry, but I can't hear 5-year plan without thinking about the movie Big Daddy, and when he's like, what's your 5-year plan? Not to die?
That really tells me a whole lot about you.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. I had to throw that out there because I laughed as soon as I heard 5-year plan.
That's so okay. Yeah. We're routinely referring to quotes from like Vacation.
Florida's closed.
Oh yeah.
That's so great. Hey, has there been a piece of advice or a life lesson that you received that you find yourself going back to, that you've kind of always went back to over your career?
I think just kind of the things that we just went over, really. I don't know that there's anything that hasn't been covered in what I just chatted about.
I have to ask this question. I actually skipped over it earlier, but I want to make sure before we move on that I don't. Is there something that your team at the credit union has heard you say so many times they can finish your sentence?
Oh, that's an awesome question. If I say first things first, usually they respond with, I'm the realist.
That's fantastic.
For those of you that don't get the pop music reference, then, you know, it's terrible. It's really, really terrible. No, I don't know that there really is a particular phrase, but I would say that, for those of you that don't know, I surround myself with some of the most wonderful people, some because I gave birth to them and others because I hired them. But one of my dearest friends, who's a DE, Mike Akers, he is just recently took over the CEO position over at Flag Credit Union down the street from us. And I'm so proud of him. He's done such a great job. But he and I used to be like peas and carrots. And I mean, we could literally, and we still do, when we look across the room at each other, we totally know what each other is thinking all the time. And so I think it's more of a style than it is an actual, you know, a particular phrase. Yep. And so the other thing is, my other favorite person in the world is my son, who at my last check, he is the youngest DE in the country. And he went and traveled the world with me, and we went to the Philippines together and worked on a DE project and have done all these crazy things. But and he did that when he was still in high school. So when he got ready to graduate from high school, I'm like, hey, here's your graduation money. You know, what do you want to do? Do you want to go to Cancun? And he's like, nope, I want to go to DE. And I'm like, oh no, what have I done?
His
dream in life is to go work at CUNA Mutual or at CUNA in Washington. I mean, the kid's like, he's hysterical. But he'll tell you, I think that not only at home, but in the office, I actually have a mom look. I totally have the, are you serious right now, mom look.
That's so fantastic.
And there's so many lessons that can be learned from motherhood or parenthood, I should say, translating into the workplace. But
I was just going to say, you know, both Jim Nussle and Bob Trunzo have been on the podcast and both listen. So maybe they'll be reaching out to your son to, the dream job, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. he's already working with, he's already got it lined up. He's going to go to grad school in Madison.
He's ready.
He's got it locked down. Yeah, dude is awesome.
That's fantastic. Before we move on to the last part of the show, you have a free day. There's nothing on the calendar. What passions do you have outside of credit unions? What is, what do you do to recharge now that you maybe get a little more sleep? And you know, what does work-life integration look like to you?
Okay, so first of all, I don't understand any of the words that you said.
they don't fit.
No idea what those words mean. No. So recently, anybody that knows me is laughing right now, because that's totally not a thing. But again, I have tried to translate my life nowadays into understanding what some free time means, and so watching all the nature, the dolphins swim by, and I'm kayaking. And all these kinds of like trying to do the whole, you know, staying in touch with nature and the earth and everything. So I know that sounds a little strange for some that know.
Hey,
I
good
might
for
be
you.
Chickens. I think I'm going to get some chickens. I've wanted chickens for a while, so I'm going to get some chickens.
There you go.
Again, so many people laughing right now.
That's fun. That's absolutely fun. All right. So the last part of the show, the rapid fire questions. The questions are rapid. Your answers don't have to be.
Okay. I'm ready.
What was Lisa like in high school? And do you remember the first time that you got into memorable trouble?
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's a horrible question. I really don't want to answer that. I was not a good kid in high school. So we're just going to keep moving.
Well, by you just moving past that, you're allowing Diana Dykstra to keep the number one position with Grand Theft Auto. So
I love Diana. She can keep it.
She can keep it.
Let's just say I didn't always follow the rules.
I think there are a few of us that were like that. So you mentioned getting into credit unions because you're like, hey, I could wear heels at this job. When you were growing up, was there a career that you wanted to do, or was it just that broad?
Oh, it was just that broad.
Awesome.
It was absolutely. I thought when I was younger that maybe, and I know this is a little contrary to being the type A person, but I really thought that I was going to be an artist.
Okay.
Because I adore like painting and anything creative. I'm a professor at a local college here teaching senior level college classes in marketing.
Okay.
And so I've kind of been able to pull that into the creative side of me, into credit unions and into, you know, the business side. So I've been successful in kind of pulling that together, I think. But that's what I thought when I was a little kid. I thought I was going to be an artist. But you know what? That doesn't pay very much.
No. Artists, that's tough. Tough to pay the bills there. Wait, are you artsy? Do you paint?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I do the painting. I have the easel and the paints and all of that.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. You know what else? I always wanted to be a mom.
Oh,
I think that was the other thing.
So.
This is funny. So my grandmother had 10 children.
Okay.
And so I always thought when I was a little kid that I would grow up and have like 10 kids. And thank God I didn't. I have two amazing children, and that's exactly what I needed to have. God knew better than I did.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you have any daily routines that if you just don't do, your day feels off?
Oh, goodness. I really enjoy cooking dinner and having a meal, even living by myself.
Okay. Yep.
Don't laugh, I don't use paper plates. I use real forks, a real plate, and I cook a real meal with like a balanced dinner with, you know, all the food groups and not, you know, pizza's not one of the food groups, although I've been known to, you know, get a pizza every now and then. But I try to keep that. That's kind of my downtime and my go-to. My other sort of relaxation, personal relaxation, is I love a bath. Like I have to have, you know, a glass of wine and my bath. And that's like my, you know, okay, leave me alone, shut out the world. Those are my two. I know that's kind of, they're kind of unusual, but that's sort of my go-to, because generally my day, and I'm not sure if you realize this, but I ran for office last year. And
I remember seeing that.
Yeah. And I'm currently running for office, local office. And so I never can predict what my day is going to be like. Some days I have to be up at 5, you know, for meetings at 7, and other days I have meetings until 9 or 10 at night. And so I just never can tell. So it's hard to be predictable. And so that's kind of my only predictability set.
What's the best album of all time? That one you can listen to without skipping a song?
Oh, wow. The whole album. I think it's going to be more of like the 80s playlist.
Oh, more and more of us. It's the Spotify playlist, right?
Yeah. So think of more of like the Wedding Singer kind of
the soundtrack.
Yeah, that's the soundtrack from the Wedding Singer, I think, would be probably more my speed. But I'm also like a huge, so I grew up in a musical family. My dad played in a band since before I was born. And so there are certain songs that my dad used to play when I was a little girl, or I'd go listen to him. And that like are super sentimental for me. So, I'm big into the whole music, and music really has an influence on my day. Like I'll put in the, I have like my power soundtrack on, or like my gangster rap when I'm getting ready to go into a board meeting or something. No joke. It horrifies my kids that I know the words to all those songs as well as, you know, stuff from the 50s or whatever. But depending on music really has an influence on my mood throughout the day, for sure.
I love that. I'm a reader. Jill and I have a stack of books you can see behind me. We have a bunch, and a lot of them have been recommended to us, and that list kind of keeps growing over the podcast. Is there a book that you either have gifted other people or that you just think everybody should read?
Yes, I'm just trying to remember the name of it. Okay. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
Oh, yeah. I've read that.
Right. Yeah. Love it. Happened to... So I read it when I very first announced that I was running for office. Someone said, you've got to read this. And it was brilliant. It was, in my mind, what I took from it when I sort of put it down. Because you can take a lot of different pieces from it. But for me, when I put the book down, it helped me to say, you can't be all things to all people, but you can't use that as an excuse to not care. So you've got to, for yourself, you've got to evaluate what does matter and what are your non-negotiables and who do you serve and whose opinion do you care about enough to influence your behaviors and actions?
We will link to that one. People should pick that up if they haven't read it. I remember buying it. Like I couldn't pass by the title of it walking through the airport one day, you know, a few years back.
Right. So,
as you've gotten older, what's become more important to you? And my favorite part of this question, has anything become less important?
Yeah. So I think certainly time with family and sort of the simplification of my life has become important. Paying attention more and watching how my actions and behaviors react to what's going on around me. I think that's really what's become more important to me and really being in tune and holding myself accountable for that. And I would say what's become less important is the opinion of the masses. Yeah, you know, it's like I've learned how to truly say to myself at the end of the day, I did the best that I could. I know I did the right thing. And I stand by that. if it was the wrong decision, it was the best decision based on the information I had at the time. And really sort of coming to terms with that and not doing all of that second guessing at 2 a.m. And so a lot of times in the beginnings of my decisions, I'll ask, will my actions allow me to sleep tonight? And if the answer is yes, then that's sort of my litmus test for how to proceed. You know, can I sleep tonight with that decision? And I think it also subtly tells me, hey, get some sleep tonight. <Go to bed>.
All right. This one might stress you out. There's a question I didn't send you. When you hear the word success, who is the first person that comes to mind?
I can think of a handful. Honestly, the first thing I think of is situations where members have achieved goals that they wouldn't have without us. Without my team. I know that sounds kind of crazy. But I have a member that came to one of my annual meetings probably about 5 years ago. And I try to go back to this YouTube video when I'm feeling down. We created a YouTube video of it. It was random. We're having our regular annual meeting and this member raises her hand and says, you know, I'd like an opportunity to speak freely. And of course, for those of you who've ever had that happen, it's a horrifying situation because you don't know what's getting ready to come out of their mouths. But she proceeds to talk about how, you know, I came to her home and we sat down together and we talked about that she was delinquent on her mortgage at the time. And we sat down and looked at her budget and realized that she had, when she was done paying her bills, she had no money left for food. And so she talks about how we put together a plan, not only for how we were going to put, you know, set her up for success going forward, but also put her in touch with resources, not just with the credit union, but put her in touch with community resources so that she would never go hungry. So we treated her holistically. So when I think of success, I want that. So that was such a powerful moment for me to be sitting up, you know, and here's this member raising her hand, talking about how she doesn't even think she'd be alive if it weren't for the credit union.
That's amazing. That's beautiful.
It was everything I could do to stand back up and speak again. And it's funny because she uses that word in what she's saying to us. And so that's what I think of when I think of success.
You'll have to
those stories.
Send me that link if you have it out there to that YouTube video, because we'll put that in the show notes for sure. It reminds me of, like, you know, Gigi Hyland talks about, like, that holistic financial approach, right? Because it's more than just you know, a loan or savings or whatever it happens to be. So that's beautiful. I love that. That's the perfect way to kind of wrap things up. So thank you for being on the show. The last question that I have for you, do you have any final asks of our listeners today or any final thoughts you'd like to share?
I think I would like to make one comment, and I think it's just something that's been really weighing on my mind over the last, you know, week or so as a lot of this has been rolling out. And some of this comes to me because of the credit union's ties to the first responder community and kind of understanding what they're going through from a mental health perspective. But also one thing, as I look back and think about the 2008 scenario, that what we're going through right now is going to have a lifelong impact on children. And not just, you know, the 18-year-old that doesn't get to graduate and have this wonderful experience, or the 22-year-old that, you know, maybe has to get married online or whatever the case may be. I'm talking about the 5-year-old and the 7-year-old that are sitting at the dinner table right now. They now have their mom or dad helping teach them. They now are listening. And I think this is the biggest thing that's been weighing on my mind, is they are now listening as mom or dad or you know, whoever's the breadwinner in the family could very well be talking, where this child can hear about their inability to make the mortgage payment or their inability to make the car payment, and how frightening it must be that for a child to not only not be able to go to school and spend time with their friends, but also to be surrounded in an environment that the level of anxiety has to be through the roof, and the lasting impacts of that. And everything we're hearing here right now that I've been staying in tune with locally is saying that the number of calls to the domestic violence shelters are going down, which means domestic violence is going way up. And financial health is one of the number one stressors outside of, you know, physical health.
Absolutely.
This is the second, you know, highest stressor that anyone can have. And so I think I would just like to, you know, I say it as much for myself as my colleagues, our industry, you know, don't underestimate the power that we have to help make things better, to fundamentally change what's happening in our communities. And it's going to be so easy to get stuck in the ruts. And I think I'd just like to just, you know, words of encouragement, let's try to lift each other up. Now's not the time to bring in the negative. Let's really try. And there's going to be enough of that to go around and enough worry to go around. I really, you know, now's the time to share with each other, not hold back on strategies or, you know, start pushing mergers or anything like that. Now's the time to really lift each other up and support each other. So I think that's the only thing I think would be really important that's been kind of laying on my heart that I'd like to close with.
Well said. We will link to everything we talked about today in the show notes. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have additional questions? LinkedIn, the Twitter machine, email? What's the preferred
I think tool? Email's probably the best. Right. Because right now, you know, if there's no time for sleep, there's no time for Twitter for me. Right. So, well, I say Facebook probably too. Facebook or email. So my email is lisabrown@tlfcutallahasseeleonfederalcreditunion.org.
We will link to that and everything else in the show notes. Thank you again so much, Lisa, for taking time out of your day.
Of course. It was a nice break from the chaos.
There we go. I'm glad to hear that. So have a great day. Thank you, Lisa.
You too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Before we go, I just wanted to thank you personally, our listeners. We know there's a lot of things taking up your time right now, and the idea that you'll take a few minutes to spend with us is not lost on us, so we thank you very much for allowing us to do what we do. Once again, thank you to Lisa for taking time out of what is a crazy schedule right now to be on the show, and a big thank you to our sponsors at PSCU. Make sure to click on their links in the show notes and give them some love, see everything they have going on right now and how they're helping credit unions in this time. Also, we are on all the podcast players out there. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and on and on. We would appreciate if you subscribe and leave a 5-star rating, maybe even a review on the old Apple podcast machine. It helps out with the visibility of the show. If you don't think we're worth the 5 stars, just don't forget I ever asked and reach out to me directly and let me know where we can improve. And don't forget about the CU Insight Experience podcast book list. Get your next book recommendation from the guests on our show delivered to your door from Amazon. If you need to, you know, pass some time while we're not allowed to go out. What a great way to do it. Get a new book. Thank you all again for listening. I hope you have a great day, and please stay healthy, my friends.